You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Hi, y'all, and welcome to Horsin' Around. Saddle up and get ready to have a darn tootin' gallopin' good time as we trot out the show that's your ultimate horse source, of course. Find out how to use good old horse sense when it comes to breeding, feeding, training, and explaining. From practical tips on caring for your horse's health to advice on how to buy horse supplies, including bridles, halters, saddles, and more. So get ready to start horsing around with your host, horse expert, and award-winning rider, Audrey Pavia. Howdy, Audrey.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Horsing Around on PetLifeRadio.com. Thanks for joining us. This week, we're going to talk about a health condition that affects a lot of horses, equine metabolic syndrome. Our guest this week is veterinarian Lydia Gray, who is currently the medical director and staff veterinarian for SmartPak Equine and the former director of owner education for the American Association of Equine Practitioners. Dr. Gray is going to tell us about equine metabolic syndrome and how we can recognize and manage this condition in our horses. We'll talk to Dr. Gray right after these messages.
Why the long face? I reckon Horsin' Around will be back in the saddle right after we round up a few words from our sponsors.
When you're looking to add a pet into your life, consider adopting a homeless animal from your local shelter or rescue group. Whether you want a kitten, puppy, or a more mature pet, a purebred or a one-of-a-kind mixed breed, even a rabbit or hamster, your shelter has the best selection of animals anywhere, all screened for good health and behavior. PetLifeRadio.com presents Take Me Home with your host, Susan Daffron. Join us each week as we showcase wonderful pets, tell stories, and even throw some pet education into the mix. So get ready to find out why the pet adoption option can be a great way to add a furry companion into your life. Take Me Home every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
We know you're chomping at the bit to hear more horsing around. Well, we're back on the trail. So park yourself over yonder and set a spell. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Hi, welcome back to Horsing Around. I'm your host, Audrey Pavia, and today we are talking to veterinarian Lydia Gray about equine metabolic syndrome. Hi, Dr. Gray, how are you?
I'm good, Audrey. How are you?
Good. Let's start out by talking about exactly what equine metabolic syndrome is.
Okay. Right now, the experts are defining it as a syndrome of obesity, insulin resistance, and laminitis in middle-aged horses. When I say obesity, I mean a horse that can be overweight or a horse that has abnormal fat deposits. So you don't have to be fat to have equine metabolic syndrome, although many horses are.
Okay, so basically those are three symptoms of the condition, right?
Well, they are symptoms of it, but they're also the criteria for the diagnosis.
Okay.
Horses have to have those three things in order for a veterinarian to say, you have equine metabolic syndrome.
Okay. And what is it exactly? Like, how is it, how does it affect the body? Like, what's going on that causes these issues?
Well, let's back up and talk about insulin resistance, because I threw out a fairly scientific term and then didn't define it. First, let's say, what is insulin? And insulin is the hormone that's secreted by the pancreas after a meal that causes glucose and other nutrients to be taken up by cells or tissues of the body and used. When you are insulin resistant, it means that your cells or tissues fail to respond to the effects of insulin, so they fail to take up glucose. So when that happens, this insulin-resistant state creates a pro-inflammatory state, and it sets horses up for laminitis and other problems. The way that I like to describe this, when people ask me, well, what causes equine metabolic syndrome, there is a strong genetic influence But obesity is the primary problem that sets off this whole cascade of metabolic abnormalities, insulin resistance leading to laminitis being the primary ones we are worried about.
So basically what you're saying is if a horse is overweight, that can trigger the condition.
That's an excellent word, and I was hoping to work that in today. When horses are overweight, it turns out that because of genes and diet and age and breed and a host of factors, the fat that certain horses produce and accumulate around their body is active fat. We like to think of fat as being inert or just taking up space. But in these horses, it's very active and hormone producing, and it sort of perpetuates itself. That's that obesity setting off the cascade of metabolic abnormalities that I was talking about. So obesity does tend to start this issue, although I'm going to repeat again, not every horse with insulin resistance is obese.
And I'm assuming not every obese horse develops equine metabolic syndrome.
Exactly. But you use that magic word trigger, and horses that are predisposed to equine metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance, when they have a trigger factor such as lush spring pastures or high sugars in the grain or perhaps a touch of colic, their threshold for developing laminitis and other problems is lowered because they're in this pro-inflammatory state already.
What's the difference between a horse just coming down with a case of laminitis and that being equine metabolic syndrome?
And this is where it gets really tricky. Like, it's not been tricky and complicated so far.
Right.
There's lots of causes of laminitis. And right now, there are five equally good theories about why horses get it. In insulin resistance, or horses with equine metabolic syndrome, the experts believe it has something to do with the hyperinsulinemic state. That is, there's abnormally high amounts of insulin circulating in the blood all the time, preventing glucose from entering tissues such as the tissues in the hoof, the lamina. Mm-hmm. And experts think that being shut off or deprived of glucose might lead to breakdown of tissue.
So how common is this condition?
That's hard to say, and I don't know if anyone has any good numbers. There was a study at Virginia that said, I think 40% of horses in this country are overweight or obese. So that's a starting figure. But I will say equine metabolic syndrome is likely to be underdiagnosed. I think many horses have it that we don't know they have it. And many horses are being diagnosed with a different problem that really have this problem. Don't you really know what that different problem is?
Yes, absolutely.
it's hyperthyroidism.
Right.
I'm going to go on record. You can record me as saying adult horses rarely develop hypo or low thyroidism. So what we have all these years thought we were treating was probably equine metabolic syndrome. And that's one of the reasons we just don't have good numbers for how many horses have EMS.
Now, I used to have a mare about 11 years ago. She's since passed away, but she was diagnosed with hypothyroidism, and she was treated with, you know, a thyroid hormone that she's given daily, and she seemed to respond to that. Now, can you explain why horses?
I think so. There are lots of reasons why horses appear to have a thyroid gland that is not functioning like it should be. And the only way that veterinarians can test how well a thyroid gland is functioning is to measure T4 and maybe T3. That's what we call the hormones that the thyroid releases. However, the release and the effect of these hormones can be altered by so many non-thyroid gland things, such as fasting, huge cause to be falsely low in your T4. Giving a horse bute can make the thyroid look low. Stress, certain diets, certain kinds of haze, there's lots and lots of reasons why you might have a false positive. What's going on is that horses are being measured by the best test we have. It's not a good test. And then non-thyroid factors are causing the thyroid gland to look like it's not doing its job. But in reality, it is. So now we're giving hormone to a horse that doesn't really need it. Fortunately, there doesn't seem to be a problem with that like there is in people, but it's still not a good idea to give a horse a, you know, prescription medication when he doesn't need it.
Right. Now, my mare, the way she was diagnosed was she became obese and, you know, even though her diet was the same as it had been before, and she became very lethargic and tired, and she developed a crusty neck, which is, you know, something that we've always thought of as a symptom of hypothyroidism.
Right, and you were wrong.
Right, and when they put her on the thyroid hormone, she did lose weight, her energy picked up, so... You know, it seemed like it helped her.
Yeah, here's what's happening. What we thought of was the crusty-necked, overweight horse as being hypothyroid was actually probably equine metabolic syndrome. Because when you take out the thyroid gland in a horse, all sorts of weird things happen. Retarded growth, increased sensitivity to cold, hind leg edema, a thickened appearance to the face. Very strange. And that's not typically what we think of as a hypothyroid horse. So what you've described in your mare, in my mind, is equine metabolic syndrome. And here's why the thyroid supplementation worked. In addition to diet and exercise and supplementation, jump-starting the metabolism with thyroid hormone really helps these horses. Mm. It causes weight loss, and it sort of kick-starts their metabolism back into gear, overcoming the active fat tissue role. And so horses should really be on it short term, 3 to 6 months, and then taper it off, and then see if they can maintain this new body condition score and level of activity without the help of the thyroid hormone. Because it's not really the thyroid gland that is the problem here. It's this equine metabolic syndrome, active fat. We're just using the metabolic hormone T4 to affect in the short term the metabolism.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that there is really a genetic component here, that's what causes it, or that's what that's the underlying reason behind it.
It certainly plays a role, because there are some breeds that are very prone to metabolic syndrome.
And what breeds are those?
Well, ponies, Morgans, Spanish Mustangs, Spanish type Mustangs, Pasifinos. A lot of the gated horses, the Tennessee Walkers and the Rocky Mountain horses, saddlebreds, kind of the ones that you think of as being crusty-necked. The fat might also accumulate at the base of the tail or the tail head. Sometimes you see a fat pad behind the shoulder. Up on top, the loin or croup, there might be extra fat, a fat pad. Even in the above the eyes, you know how the older horses appear sunken in right there? These horses might actually bulge out with fat. And even the sheaths of a male horse might be swollen from fat.
Right. Yeah, I have seen that and wondered what that was. Okay, that's interesting. I happen to have a Spanish Mustang, so...
Oh, okay. How
yeah,
old?
So he's 8.
Well, he's and, right at the age, because it helped me remember, this is a middle-aged disease of horses, so 8 to 18.
And he puts on weight very easily.
You know, we call these horses easy keepers or air ferns, or there's a couple other names like that, but that's what we're talking about.
And I only give him grass hay, but if I give him even a little bit more grass hay than he usually gets, he starts putting on weight.
Yeah.
So I guess I have to be careful with him.
You do. Be very careful. I assume he gets no grain.
No grain, no.
Does he get a vitamin mineral supplement, though?
I give him a pound of Triple Crown Light with no molasses, which is very low carb. And that's all I give him.
Here's what I would recommend. I guess we're switching right now into how to manage this disease.
Right. And
okay?
We're going to, you know what? Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll get into that.
Good. Perfect.
Okay. Hang on. We'll be right back.
Why the long face? I reckon Horsin' Around will be back in the saddle right after we round up a few words from our sponsors.
Yeah. That's it. You're madder than a junkyard dog, and you're not going to take it anymore. Your feathers are ruffled, your dander is up, and you've got a definite bone to pick. Join us each week on Pet Peeves, the show that lets you dig through the dirt and unleash your passion for pets. Your host, pet expert and award-winning author, Amy Shojai, will talk about what makes you howl and what hisses you off. Pet Peeves, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
We know you're chomping at the bit to hear more horsing around. Well, we're back on the trail. So park yourself over yonder and set a spell. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Welcome back to Horsing Around. I'm your host, Audrey Pavia, and today we're talking to veterinarian Lydia Gray about equine metabolic syndrome. So, Dr. Gray, let's talk about how to manage equine metabolic syndrome or prevent it. Maybe prevent it and then manage it.
Well, gosh, they're kind of the same thing, I guess, because the practices that you use to manage one that has it are kind of the practices you would use, I guess, if you have a horse who you think might get it. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to diet and exercise and possibly supplementation. Mm-hmm. So let's start with diet. These horses need to be on a low sugar and starch diet. And since the basis of diet is forage, we can begin there. Unfortunately, most horses that have EMS probably need to be pulled off pasture. And it may not be for their entire life, and it may not be even year-round. There may be times of the year, certainly there's times of day, when it's safer to put a horse who can't have a lot of sugar onto grass. But when you're treating one that's either developed laminitis because of it or is thinking real hard about developing laminitis, I'd get them off the pasture, put them on a grass hay, but the grass hay too needs to have low sugar starch. Uh-huh. And the number that's recommended is around 10-12% NSC or non-structural carbohydrates. How do you know that? You have your hay analyzed. I talk to a lot of people that say, but I get my hay from a different place every time. I get 10 bales at a time. It's not worthwhile. By the time I get the results back, I'm done with that batch. Right. Then I say, soak the hay. 30 minutes in warm water, 60 minutes in cold water will suck out a lot of the sugars, making it safer to feed.
Are there particular types of hay that are just naturally lower in carbs and sugar?
I'm going to recommend a website for people to go to because the hays are different throughout the country, and so one kind of hay that we might have in my state might not be available in different states. So If you go to equianalytical.com and there's a dash between equa and analytical, You can pull down different types of hays and look at the results of testing.
Okay, and we will put that website on the episode notes portion of our Horsing Around website so people can access that.
Good. So I don't want to make any blanket recommendations because hay can be so different, even from one field to the next in the same state, but that's a great resource.
Okay.
So then you have to say, well, how much do I feed them? Because you can't just put a round bale out and let them eat on it all day.
Right.
And the advice is start at 2% of their current body weight. So If you have a 1,000-pound horse, 2% is 20 pounds of hay. And then decrease it slowly to 1.5%. So that's 15 pounds of hay. And then when the horse is adjusted to that amount and has begun to lose weight, then you can go to 15% of their ideal weight. So maybe You want this horse to weigh 900 pounds. So then you can keep adjusting down.
Right. Do you recommend what we're talking about? Do you recommend that for any of the breeds that we discussed? Are there horses that are more likely to develop it, you know, other than the breeds that you mentioned?
You know, I'm a firm believer in weighing hay and analyzing hay and knowing what my horses are getting.
Uh-huh.
I think it's probably more important in horses that are likely candidates to not feed them a traditional sweet feed. To me, that sets them up for failure.
Right.
So rather than fortified grains, I like feeding ration balancers or multivitamins. What people run into, they get scared of grain, and so they pull all the grain, and then all the horse is eating is a most likely low-quality grass hay, very stemmy, mm-hmm. Maybe over a year old, maybe someone's last year's hay, you know? And mm-hmm. so now the horse is deficient in what he needs as far as vitamins and minerals and maybe even protein through amino acids. So, and then they maybe give a handful of grain to put a supplement in. If you read uh-huh. the bags of fortified grains, it tells you in order to meet the horse's minimum requirements of vitamins and minerals and protein, you need to feed this many pounds for, say, a 1,000-pound horse might need 6 or 7 pounds of a fortified grain. The people All are right. feeding a handful. I would rather go to a ration balancer or a multivitamin mineral supplement, which doesn't have any sugar, but fills in the gap for those vitamins and minerals and other nutrients the horse is not getting because all the grain's been pulled. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Good. Okay. So we've done hay or forage. We've done grain. I have to mention a no treats.
Uh-huh.
Someone once said, well, is it okay to feed a peppermint? And I wrinkled my nose up and I went, well, you know, that's almost all sugar. And she said, oh, he gets a bag a day.
Oh, my gosh, that's a lot.
My goodness, no, he can't have a bag a day. And I don't even want him to have one a day. So you need to be on the hunt for no or low sugar treats.
Mm-hmm. What about carrots and apples, the natural treats?
Well, carrots
sugar,
are pretty
huh?
high in sugar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Apples, I think, are better. But if you're treating a horse with equine metabolic syndrome and they're foundering as we speak, absolutely mm-hmm. not. If
right.
you have a recovering EMS or a horse that's prone to it and you're not there yet, an occasional baby carrot for work very well done might be
mm-hmm.
okay.
So we've talked about hay, grain, and treats. Is there anything else?
Well, you're probably familiar with there are some specific ingredients that are added to supplements that anecdotally seem to improve these horses. And I'm talking about chromium. And mm-hmm. magnesium, cinnamon, and there are some herbs and other ingredients that seem to cause horses to lose weight and improve their insulin sensitivity and decrease their risk of laminitis. And if those work in your horse, super.
Mm-hmm.
They're extremely popular. I think that it's important to maintain at least 100%. Some nutritionists are saying 150% of your mineral requirements as set by the NRC. And so that mm-hmm. might be how magnesium works.
Right.
Because you're supposed to keep that in a ratio with calcium, 2 parts calcium to 1 part magnesium. So some of these horses could simply be deficient in magnesium.
Okay, one thing we've kind of skipped over is diagnosis. How do veterinarians diagnose equine metabolic syndrome?
Well, this is one of those diagnoses that I say is an over-the-fence diagnosis. That is, if I'm driving along and I see an overweight horse, especially with this abnormal fat deposits in these key areas we've talked about, I kind of think to myself, oh, I wonder if he has equine metabolic syndrome, if it's a Morgan or a Mustang or something. And you can simply do a fasting blood draw and measure insulin and glucose as a screening test. And by fasting, I mean it's okay to feed hay. If you can pull it by 10 p.m. the night before, that's ideal. But no pasture and no grain, and then the vet draws the blood in the morning. So mm-hmm. it's a very realistic assessment of your horse's insulin. If the insulin is high, when there should be no sugar in the body from a meal to send in the tissues, then you might have your diagnosis. If it's borderline, there's a dynamic test called CGIT or combined glucose insulin test. And while this might be a bit trickier to run in the field and many people choose to send their horse to a referral center or a hospital to do it, it can be done with those handheld glucometers that human diabetics uh-huh. use. And all this
right.
test is again, it's fasting, and you draw your baseline of glucose and insulin. Then you give the horse glucose and insulin, and you continue drawing blood every few minutes over a period. It can be several hours, but you have your answer in about 45 minutes. If the horse's glucose does not go back to that baseline normal, in about 45 minutes to an hour, then he's got insulin resistance. So there are some very good tests out there to diagnose it. One other thing we didn't talk about was how is this different from Cushing's disease or pars pituitary intermedia dysfunction. And I, again, I'm going to go on record. I have some very firm opinions here. It's a completely different disease. This is a disease of older horses, and it's a dysfunction of the pituitary gland. And so what happens is the hypothalamus is supposed to be inhibiting the pituitary gland, but it doesn't. And so while not actually becoming a tumor, as we used to think, cells in the pituitary gland do become enlarged and overactive, and they release hormones that normally shouldn't be circulating all the time. One thing that happens is that those hormones cause cortisol, the stress hormone, to be released from the adrenal glands. And then you get this collection of clinical signs caused by chronically elevated cortisol in the blood.
Okay. So why is it that people sometimes confuse Cushing's with EMS?
Because there's some overlap in the symptoms and the criteria. Equine metabolic syndrome horses and Cushing's disease horses, they both can have insulin resistance, but they get it for different reasons. And then they both can develop laminitis, but from different reasons. They both can be overweight. They both can be thin. So there's some overlap. And even in the breeds, one of the most common breeds to develop Cushing's disease, Morgans. So we see them in both. It's possible that horses that have equine metabolic syndrome might be heading on the path to Cushing's disease. And so managing the EMS might slow that progression down or prevent it altogether.
And doesn't Cushing's, isn't that usually associated with a hair coat issue where the coat is not shut out?
This is another over-the-fence diagnosis. If you see a horse standing in a pasture with hirsutism, which is the long, curly hair, the only reason they can have that, unless they're a curly basker breed, is Cushing's disease. And some people would choose not to diagnose that because there are very good blood tests for Cushing's as well. However, I encourage owners to have their horses tested for this because not only do you confirm the diagnosis, but it gives you a baseline because when you start treatment for Cushing's disease, there is actual medical treatment in the form of pergolide is best. Some horses respond to cyproheptadine. But in, you know, 30 days, 60 days, twice a year, it's nice to rerun those tests and use the test results as well as how the horse looks to see if your medical program is working.
So basically, it's important to test, even if your horse has, if you suspect EMS or you want to make sure. Yeah, you want to make sure. Now, is there anything that, aside from diet and exercise and supplements, that a veterinarian might do for your horse if he has EMS?
Right. Well, we talked a little bit about you can jumpstart the metabolism by prescribing a thyroid hormone. But that's short term. That's 3 to 6 months. And then you wean the horse off and see if your diet and exercise program can maintain.
So that's pretty much it. There's no magic pill for EMS, huh?
There is no magic pill. There is a new prescription medication called metformin that a couple of research institutions are investigating. But the results of its use in horses, it's a diabetic drug for people. And the results of its use in horses have been some positive and some negative. So they haven't quite figured out what population of horses it works best in and what the right dose is and all that. But we're sort of, you know, paying attention to that. In horses with Cushing's disease, the new drug on the market is one that's actually used in dogs, and that's called trilastine. But it's not